Good evening. Let's call to order the Board of Library Trustee meeting of November 3rd, 2025 at 7 p.m. The city does not tolerate disruptive behavior in our meetings. Sunnyvale prides itself on the rich diversity of our residents. We are committed to creating a culture of belonging where members of diverse community feel included, safe, and respected. This board meeting is considered a limited public forum, which means the board can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments must be limited to the agenda item being considered by the board for consent calendar or public hearing items. Speaker comments during oral communications must be limited to matters within the board's authority, generally referred to as within the board's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker comments are not related to an agenda item, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with content of this speech. Location and online meeting details are available on the Board of Library Trustees agenda. Use the show caption button to view captions on Zoom. Comments on matters not on agenda or presentation items must be submitted prior to the time I call the item for oral communication. Comments on the agenda items must be submitted prior to the time I close the public hearing on the agenda item. Speakers are requested to keep the comments to the time period set for public comments for the agenda item, which will be strictly enforced. Guidelines are posted on the city website and on the Board of Library Trustees meeting agenda. Please join me in the salute to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic of which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Recording officer, may we please have a roll call?
Yes. Chair Jetta Konda?
Here.
Vice Chair Hugh?
Here.
Board Member Hod?
Here.
Board Member Liu?
Here.
Board Member Lam? Okay, we have five board members present.
Moving on to our first item 25-1037. Is there a staff presentation?
There is, and it's me. Good evening. Let's see. Yeah, this is always exciting. This is a, I think, a really fun presentation. We get to take a really big, broad look at sort of how we're doing at the library, but we're also going to dive a little deep and take a look at some really specific things too. Before we start, I just want to recognize a lot of credit goes to Laura Jamal, our department management analyst, who really did a lot of the heavy lifting to put this presentation together. The plan was for her and I to co-present this and to kind of tag team it. Unfortunately, she is ill and not able to be with us tonight. So I'm going to do my best to kind of walk us through the entire thing. I'm sure you'll have a lot of interesting questions and insights to it. So let's
hey,
jump
Garrett,
in. Yeah.
I just want to let you know, Laura is online. So if anybody has a question or you have questions, she's online.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Laura. Okay. So let's jump right in. Looking at, I'm going to show you a lot of different charts in this presentation, but as I've alluded to in the past when we've given this, we don't want to overwhelm you with just showing you chart after chart after chart and, you know, and endless amounts of data. I've also talked about in the past wanting to maybe reframe certain data points and statistics that we show you to better tell the picture of, you know, where we're at right now and also where we're going in the future. So you will see some things that look very familiar if you've seen this before and some things that are a little different. And I'll try to point out what those things are. This is a chart that we generally show you every year, and this is our visitor count for last fiscal year, July through June, and a couple, you know, about, you know, 4 years prior to that. In the past, we've tended to show this like 8 years, 9 years, you know, back, several years pre-pandemic. And the thing is that what we've found is since the pandemic, we, you know, everything is kind of rebounded, right? Everything dipped at the bottom there. That's what that, you know, 39,000 you see there represents that basically the most of the year that we lost, right, to the pandemic with closure. And then as we reopened, the sort of gradual, you know, increase back to, you know, normal usage. And then we've seen sort of, you know, generally some increases as people have just gotten the library back into their, you know, life habits and all that. So this is a fairly, you know, indicative curve of what we see post-pandemic. And going forward, this is what we're going to kind of focus on. We're going to sort of not forget the past, but it's just not as relevant to where we are today and where we plan to go in the future to look back that far. Since, as we know, the way that we ran ourselves and the way that our community even viewed ourselves in a lot of ways is very different today than it was pre-pandemic. So as you can see in this particular count, we're seeing a modest increase in traffic at the library. We attribute this a lot to the continued draw and strength of our programming. Right. We'll dive in and look and see some circulation statistics next. But we do know that programming is a big draw. We had some new features, right, that have been really drawing people in, including our early learning hub. So jumping into some circulation stats, this is our total circulation. So this represents everything, all of our print materials, media, and ebook usage as well. You'll see that it's a slight decline from the previous year. We'll go into kind of deeper what made this up and why there was a decline. I think some areas that are slowing in usage, but other areas that are not. And so we'll dive a little bit deeper and explain what some of those pieces are, but just want to, again, provide you that big picture look before we dive deeper. While we do like to always take a big look and talk about some big statistics, I think it's always really important for us to remember that every stat, right, every number, every tick mark that we show on these represents a person, right, a human being with a unique life, and they use things, right? They use things that matter to them and matter and make a difference in their life. So I always think it's really fun and important for us to go down and look and see what are some of the things that people are actually doing at the library. We can look at these big numbers, but what are some actual things? So we tend to show you some sort of top 10 lists. We've expanded a few, cut a few, and changed how we show a few. So this one, I just wanted to point out some adult fiction highlights. These were our most popular fiction adult titles over the last fiscal year. Some interesting notes on this, that actually four of the titles that were on last year's top 10 list were on the previous top 10 list too. So some real staying power with some of those titles. And some of them are authors who had a different title on last year's list, and then their newest title appear on this list. So there are some real staying power among certain authors as well. So if you're looking for a good read, these are still good books to look at. We in the past lumped adult fiction and nonfiction together, and this year we decided to split it out, one, just because we wanted to highlight more of the really great titles that we have in the collection, but also we tended to find that the fiction titles would sometimes like squeeze out the space for nonfiction, and we wanted to point out what some of the nonfiction things that people are really looking for. Two of the titles for this year were on last year's list as well, Cracking the Coding Interview and Atomic Habits. So I think that tells us a little bit about some of the things that are always top of mind for our residents. The other titles you can look and see, they tend to be sort of psychology, self-help, but also improvement. Two titles from, we would call it the medicine and health area, two from the economics focus areas, and one title related to job searching and promotions. Taking a look at some of our children's titles. Notes here. So another thing that we decided to do, we used to kind of just show top 10 overall. We created two different children's lists here. The first one is children's series. And this is because when we did that top 10 list, it was pretty much the usual suspects. It was like, okay, 50% Dog Man and like 30% Babysitter's Club. And maybe you got one different title in there. So we said, but yeah, that's great. But we also want to recognize that there's a lot of really great non-series titles in there. Series tend to fuel themselves, right? Because a kid, once they read one and get hooked on it, they want to read every single book in that, sometimes multiple times. So we decided to acknowledge the series that are really moving Cirque for our kids, and you can see them listed here. Some real popular series. But then we also wanted to dive a little deeper and show some non-series titles, things that kind of stand on their own and still represent a lot of popularity and checkouts from among our kids. You see that there are still a lot of graphic novels in the mix, the Raina Telgemeier books, but also some picture books. Chicka Chicka Boom Boom is our most popular picture book in the library. And then still some classics, right? Charlotte's Web, still up there on that list. So it's really nice to see the diversity of types of materials that our kids actually are reading. And then just a quick look at our teen checkouts. You can see a variety of different things there. The current top three are actually were last year's top three, but shuffled in a different order. So again, the teens are pretty consistent in what they've been interested in for the past couple of years. You know, adventure thrillers, romance, fantasy, all the things that we would expect teens to be interested in, they really stick to here. Okay, back to another chart. We show this over this next section. We're going to take a little deeper dive into some of the specifics around circulation and collections. This one, to set it up, children's circulation. This is combined all material, so print media and for kids. And so what you see here is the staying power of children's collections, that they stay high. We know that we need to maintain this, and when possible, to continue to invest and grow this collection as well, because there's just continued staying power with kids' books. I will revisit this slide a little bit after we talk a little bit more when we get into print versus e, and when we divide that out a little bit as well. So this shows the bottom part there, the children and teens is mostly what you saw on the previous slide, but we wanted to just drill down specifically to last year to this year to show a couple real specific things. One, the quote unquote market share of the children and teen collections versus adults. I think this further supports what we just looked at and see the need for the continued investment and focus on our children's collections, because right, 70% of our circulation is made up of those children's and teen titles. We also see obviously the very modest increase in children and teens circulation with a decrease in adults. Now, however, I think it's debatable whether a 6.3% decline is bad or not, or is a cause for concern. Again, in a couple slides, when we get into some of the specifics in the collections, I think you'll understand why we don't feel like this is actually a bad thing. And it's pretty explainable why there's a dip there, but there's actually still some positivity to report as far as adult collections go as well. Okay. So then just getting back to a couple things about collections. Now, looking at some of our media, this is a video list. What we did a little differently here, however, is last year we've reported, again, just total circulation, like which title checked out the most times overall. The list, again, was sort of a usual suspects kind of thing, because basically like whatever were the biggest movies at the box office were pretty much going to make up the list. And maybe we would get a mini series or a television series in there if it was really, really a phenomenon, but it was kind of hard to see those when we looked at those. So what we did instead is we actually said, well, what if we looked at it and said, what are those titles that maybe we get a little more bang for the buck, right? Maybe we have fewer copies of them to generate a lot of overall circ, but those few titles that we have are really, really moving. So these are sort of like punching above their weight, maybe, right? These are items that are spectacularly popular given the number that we might own. And so as you can see, a lot of television series make it there. Those are more expensive for us to purchase. So we tend to have fewer copies of them overall compared to, for example, a movie DVD with one disc, for example. The other thing I think you notice here is if you look at what those titles are, a lot of them are actually shows that were originally created for streaming exclusively. And so it's very reasonable to, you know, to infer that with our patrons, if they didn't, for example, with Star Trek Strange New Worlds, that was a Paramount Plus exclusive, right? You could not watch it on regular TV unless you had a subscription to that service. If you don't have it, you just couldn't see it unless you waited for the library to actually buy a copy when it came out on DVD. So in that sense, I don't think it's a surprise to see that patrons are really actively seeking out some of those titles that they actually struggle to get with streaming. So we see a little bit of insulation from the popularity of streaming and how we know that it is affecting our media usage. So speaking of that, when we start looking at media usage, this is non-book physical circulation. So this represents movies, TV shows, audiobooks on CD, Library of Things, as well as music CDs, right? That's the other thing. So as you can see here, a decline, right? We've known this for a while that media interest is declining, particularly in the area of music CDs. Music CDs are clearly being replaced interest-wise by streaming services, availability of music online. And so it's definitely taking a hit. We are not really actively investing in growing our music CD collection at this point. We're sort of letting it kind of fade away as interest continues to decline. However, you can still see that, you know, we have over 100,000 circs among those areas. And a lot of that is made up of that video and audiobook usage. Those continue to be popular even in physical media, even though there is availability of streaming. But again, there's a little bit of insulation. So even though people are interested in streaming, there is still relatively high interest in overall media usage, but it does continue to decline. So that impacts the amount to which we continue to invest or seek to grow those collections, especially when you consider the limited space availability and the need to grow in other areas as well. When we're talking about really truly prioritizing different collections over another. Library Things is in this. We're going to dive a little bit deeper into Library Things in a couple slides, but Library Things overall is a very, very small percentage of this makeup. I did want to note there was a little note that we added in there for last fiscal year's number. Last year, it's very small, but we reported an extremely high number last year. Reporting that number and the need for us to want to come back and this year show things a little differently led us to actually very deeply scrutinize some of the ways that we were counting some things. What we realized was that we actually, in some cases last year, especially when we were looking at this particular stat, there was a little confusion and we ended up kind of double counting a few things. So we over-reported the stat to you last year. A lot of that was because it was quite confusing because that was also, we ended up accidentally, I guess, including the e-book usage, which we know had a big spike. I'll talk about that in a couple slides as well. But that's why that number is significantly different from what we reported last year. But we believe that this number is accurate in terms of what we showed in 2022 and what we showed for last fiscal year. So now it's more in line with what's accurate. So earlier in the first slide, we talked about that decline in total, or in the second slide, we talked about that decline in total circ. This explains a little bit about what, you know, generates that. We see that big decrease in non-book usage represents a big chunk of the decline there. However, I think it's really interesting to point out that what we don't see as a contributor to that decline is the book usage. Our book usage actually stayed quite consistent from last year to this year, which is actually pretty remarkable. We hear a lot, even from talking with other libraries, that they experience declines in interest in books. They see that ebook adoption is really actually hurting print book circulation in some cases. We're not quite experiencing that same thing here in Sunnyvale. I think that it's a testament to our community of readers that they want to read no matter what the format is, and also it shows that our staff do a really good job of maintaining print collections that are very interesting, very relevant, and that we try to make the titles as accessible as possible as well. So in addition to that physical media decline, this is the real culprit into why we actually experienced a decline overall in total circulation. That's because the e-collection circuit, or e-books, did go down. This is where we did see last year, let me set it up. Last year, we experienced a very unusual spike in e-book usage. We attributed that to call it an exploitation of loopholes in our library card issuance program. Word spread that it was really easy to get a Sunnyvale library card, and you online you could use that card to check out a lot of different ebooks. And people were using that, but those were people who should not have been able to get a library card issued based on our residency requirements. We eased some of those requirements during the pandemic for ease of access. We didn't really. Plug those holes when we reopened back to sort of normal service. And then word got out that, oh, this is actually still really easy to do. So guess what? You know, all my friends and family on Reddit, go and you know, get yourself 5 library cards issued, maybe, right? We were seeing that over certain periods of time, we were seeing thousands of cards being issued in short periods of time and really maxing out ebooks usage. So we saw a huge spike. It was not as big as we reported last year, but when we went back and sort of corrected those numbers, it was still really big, right? You can see from 2022 to 2023, that big increase. And then basically what we saw last year is, now that we've sort of fixed those issues with library card issuance, we've seen a decline. Now the right people have library cards and are using them sort of at the right levels. And we see, though, that if we kind of throw out last year completely as an aberration, you'll see that what we really did see is, from the last 2 years, we've seen a quite significant increase in usage of ebooks. This is a new stat that we're showing you this year. This is e-resources, but we kind of struggled with how to call it. This is like one reason why we haven't reported this to you in the past, is because this is kind of a hard thing to report, and I'll explain why. It was hard to kind of name. We're calling it e-resources non-checkout use. What does that mean? Well, these are those e-resources that we make available, but they're not something that is like a book where you check it out and we can count the number of titles that were used. These might represent database usage. They can also represent some of our resources where maybe what you actually do is stream a video, but not actually check it out. The challenge with this is that all the different vendors and platforms that we use count what usage means differently. And so it's just not easy for us to give you a number that is consistent. The way I like to think of it is, this is kind of like fruit salad. Depending on what's in season right now, you might have a little more of this and a little less of this. And then this year, there's some new hot fruit. And so you put that into your mix too that you never had before, right? But in the end, you're still going to have fruit, but the actual makeup of it is going to look a little different. Last year, as you can see, we've seen a significant increase in that non-checkout usage. Again, you have to look at it a little bit of apples to oranges, to keep the analogy, from year to year, because what we actually subscribe to from each year might be a little different. Even though we might keep a certain database the same, the way that the platform, their ability to track usage sometimes increases, or they give us new ways to count. And so we say, boy, this is actually better data. We never really had access to this, but now we can report it. So that's, I think, in large part why we see increases, because our ability to track these gets better over time. But the other thing is that we do every year, we find some real hot items. Last year, it happened to be our A to Z resources database, which is a database that some people use for like lead generation. If they're in sales, they can use it to get corporate information. They can run analysis about companies, in different regions, industries, and also access industry reports and things like that. So we find it very useful for entrepreneurs, people that are interested in start small businesses. And what a lot of times happens is that if somebody somebody stumbles upon it or learns that we have this resource, they really dig deep into it, generate a lot of usage, maybe while they're preparing, you know, to do a pitch or preparing to write a business plan. But once they finish that project, then maybe they kind of go away and don't use it after a while. So we think that we had some really aggressive users last year that generate a lot of that. The other thing that adds to this is the usage of e-magazines. The e-magazines are typically not something that gets checked out. They are just available all the time. So we count the number of uses that they get. And of course, that can vary depending on whether people are, you know, really interested in reading a particular magazine or when we maybe add or get a hot new magazine added to our collection as well. Okay, let's talk about, again, some specific items that are really popular out there. This is Library of Things. We know is very popular. We used to show you just total checkouts, but again, kind of like what we did with the media, we also wondered, you know, we know that some of these items are popular in large part because we just have a lot of them. The state parks pass is an example of that. We have many copies of that. We love the fact that it gets used a ton, but it's a little bit unfair, right? It's unfair to compare that item to the ones where maybe we only have one or two or three items just because we haven't been able to grow that particular item. But we asked ourselves, of those maybe smaller quantity items, which ones are really, really moving? Which ones do people really want? So that's actually that second column there, checkouts per item owned. So you can see that our most popular single items or, you know, items where we have maybe just a handful of them, check out on pace 10 or more times per item, right? So for every 3D pen that we own, it gets checked out 10 times over the course of the year. And when you consider, you know, 3-week checkout, that's pretty good. When you consider the amount of time that it's actually being used in someone's hand and then the amount of time it takes for us to check it in, have it on hold for the next person for pickup, these are in use constantly. It would actually be hard to raise these numbers. These are about maxed out quantity. And you can see what are they? There are Storytime to Go kits. There are some of our new techie items, the digital camera kits, thermal camera. Also I love the idea, the family bird watching kit and the rolling cooler. It's like things that are designed to bring for people to use together, right? And the Storytime kits, right? Those are things, a Storytime kit is a backpack, like you see pictured there, that's full of some books and some toys and a handout with songs and ideas to do a story time themed in your own home with the materials we give you. So you can like basically run your own story time. So again, the items that are most popular are the ones that are designed to be done with your family. And I love that idea. Shaughnessy reported to you kind of deeply about Library of Things just last month. So I'm not going to dive deep into this, but to again repeat the idea that Library of Things continues to grow. We add items in, they get checked out, they kind of get maxed out there, and we try to work to add more items to it. It feels right now like the growth is really limitless with this collection. But as you can see, again, overall with 5,000 checkouts, it is a small percentage compared to our other items. When you think back to that previous slide with non-book collections, right, among 100,000 checkouts for our physical media, our physical non-book collections, Library Things is relatively small. And then this is the last slide we'll show for now, which is our interlibrary loan. Last year, we reported that it was a little bit unusual that we had sort of flipped and become a net receiver of items. That means that our patrons were requesting more items from Link Plus to come in than we were actually loaning out, when historically we've always tended to be a net lender. Being a net lender sort of implies that our collection, that the items that we have are maybe unique, are particularly highly demanded, are difficult to find in other places. We take it as a little bit of a source of pride that our, you know, that we do such a good job making our collection interesting and relevant that other libraries want to take advantage of that as well. So we do end up being a net lender. And as you can see, this past year, we got back to that. We did feel that was an aberration of the previous year, and we're back on track. But I do like the idea that we are a little closer together. I think it's healthy for us to be fairly close on the amount of books that are going out versus the ones that are coming in. Okay, so the next sort of what we're going to shift gears now and talk a little bit about programming and what we're seeing there. So this is a slide that we tend to show you in the past, and this is basically just what we're seeing overall with attendance at our programs, and then which sort of age groups are making up that that increase. So as you can see, we were fairly stable on program attendance from last fiscal year to this, and it's pretty much the same, right, across the board. The same audiences, for the most part, are the ones coming to our programs. I think what this tells us is that, again, there's a lot of staying power with what we're doing. We are doing the right kinds of programs that are attracting people in. The modest increase shows that we are improving a little bit there. But I do think that, as you know, we feel somewhat constrained by the facilities in our ability to add more programs and really increase capacity for these. So the specific breakdown, when you look at the number of programs that we offer per age group, you can see here, always led by our preschool programs. They're just kind of the bread and butter. You can always count on those story times and, of course, highly, highly demanded. But also we see a high number of adult and general interest programs. General interest are the ones that are sort of all ages or are not specific to adults or kids only. And then what we wanted to do here is we wanted to go away a little bit from just top 10 lists, and we wanted to just highlight some programs that we thought were really special and had good attendance in different areas. And so this is a list of some of the highlighted adult services programs and their attendance figures from last fiscal year. You can just kind of take a look. You will notice that some of them are, the stats are generated by maybe a series. So for example, last year, we really, really increased our focus on our sustainability programs, led as you've met Jack, our sustainability librarian, with him and along with the rest of the team, I'm really trying to sort of raise our game in sustainability. And you can see really great results there from the 26 programs that we offered last fiscal year. Also on this slide, some library-wide programs, the ones that really, really draw the crowds, especially Lunar New Year and our Holi program, which was very, very popular last year. And then Passport to Asia, which was sort of the celebration of our summer activities from last year. Here, same concept, but here are some highlights for youth programs and some ones that we're really, really proud of. And then I don't want to steal all the thunder. I would like Karina, our supervising librarian for children, to come back and talk a little bit more deeply about the successes that we saw in our summer reading program. But did want to, this is the first chance we've had to report some stats back from how the summer went. And as you can see, it was great. We had over 3,000 people sign up for the program. The thing that I'm most proud of that is that we shifted a little bit and we changed the kind of the mechanism of how we did summer reading this year. In the past, you would sign up and then you would only get a prize, a free book after you finished the program, right? After you finished your log and turned it in, it's all online now. But when you did that, then you could come in and get your book. We shifted a little bit, and this year we decided, what if we actually gave the prize at the beginning as a sort of a gift for sign up, as a way to really jumpstart you. So it's like we're having you come into the library, we're telling you you need to read all summer long, but and we're going to give you a book that you chose and you get to keep it to really, you know, this is going to be your first book you're going to read. We think people really responded to it. We saw really strong sign up figures. People were very engaged in the idea that all I need to do is come in, sign up, and I get that book. We did see a dip, you know, not as many people finished the program overall. And we know that part of it is because, well, you know, I kind of got my prize. The finishing rate was still strong. The reward, you know, of course, for finishing is that you get the entry for the sort of the large grand prizes. So there is still a lot of interest in that. But the bottom line is for us is that we feel like it's just important to know that kids in our community are getting books into their hand, and that is happening through summer reading. And then of course, just the number of total books read, when you consider the number of people who participated versus that implies that 14 plus books average per, you know, participant. Now we know that's not, you know, we know everyone didn't read 14, but what this tells us is that some of our really, really top readers out there read way more than 14 books over the summer, which is just, again, mind blowing, you know, in a great way. We did also want to highlight the cultural programming that we've been supporting. This has been a real focus for us in the past couple of years. We've invested heavily into our cultural inclusion budget to increase both the quantity and the quality of programming that we offer with a cultural focus. And as you can see here, the results are really paying off. We almost doubled the number of people who have attended a cultural program over the past fiscal year from last. And then the other thing we wanted to highlight here is a little bit of our outreach. For us, you know, outreach is really important. It it illustrates that we think of outreach as a very powerful tool for addressing equity needs and being really responsive to community needs. No matter what constraints we have, you know, inside our building, when we go out, we actually are able to, you know, bring programs directly to patrons where they are, where they need them to be. And so, you know, so again, we're really proud of our outreach activities. Some of the highlights here are with our homebound delivery, which wanted to tell you a little bit about that. We're serving about on average 36 clients monthly. And last fiscal year, we delivered over 2,100 books to those clients. And then again, when we take some programs, these are not the most attended programs, but this is just a selection of some programs, outreach events outside our walls, our Earth Day activity, attending a farmer's market, and our family fun nights, which were really went gangbusters last year with over 2,500 participants in the park having fun during those events. Continuing on the theme of equity, we also wanted to give you just a quick couple highlights about where our literacy program is at right now. We have seen great increases in this. Again, this is another program that we've really invested, increased our investment in, hiring a full-time adult literacy coordinator for the staff, supported with grant funding from the state. But Hee Jung and the team have really done a great job of recruiting both learners and volunteer tutors. And as you can see here, right now we have 22 pairs that are actively working together, and that we have 12 prospective learners that are sort of waiting or are in their administrative process or waiting for a tutor to be trained and available for them. We have 3 prospective tutors that are in the process. So as you can see, there is a delta there. We do need to attract more tutors. So we will always bang the drum to, you know, get the word out that if you are, you know, if you speak English, if you can read English, we can use you. We can use you to participate, and you can really have an impact in people's lives. We wanted to, again, just drill down and highlight the idea that the people who come, you know, to the library are human beings with very real interests and needs. And so some of the, our learners have told us that the reason why they've come to the literacy program is, as you can see here, one of our learners says, I want to help my daughter in school more, so I know I need to improve my English ability for that. Another person wants to become a trainer, a physical trainer, but in order to get that certificate, they know that they need to improve their English to be hireable. Another person loves movies and wants to be able to sort of like blog or go on social media. I think there's maybe an influence, they want to maybe become an influencer, but they feel like they need to improve their English ability to do their reviews. Another person, again, motivated by school, their kids' schoolwork, and another person really just wants to sort of improve their cultural literacy. I think they're interested in knowing English so they can feel a more part of this community. And I think that's really lovely as well. And so I'll just wrap up with a couple, again, stories. These are things that people have told us after they've attended some of our programs. And you can read them here, but some of these that I just really love. Someone told us the rhymes and the vibe at story time were great. Love that. couple plugs for our DSLR camera photography program. Somebody said, you know, I really like being able to use a good camera, and I like that our instructor answered questions thoroughly. We've heard, again, really positive things about our early learning hub. I think we love this room, really sums it up there. And then, you know, some different events, our bird walk at Don Edwards Reserve. Love that we actually gave binoculars to people to see the birds close up. And then again, some comments about our adult cultural programs as well, and really praising the quality of the speakers that we were bringing in for some of these cultural programs. Very authentic and very, very real. And then our sewing lab is always popular. We get a lot of positive feedback from there. You can see a very satisfied patron learning to sew. This quote isn't from that person, but they were saying that they hadn't touched a sewing machine in over 42 years and are now able to complete sewing projects. And then you know, some our research and rebates, helping people save some money, I think is always a good thing. But we know, I like that one. It was helpful to get step-by-step plan to make the change to electrify our home, to really make a difference, you know, and support our sustainability goals as well. And I think the last one we'll share is a comment from the ESL conversation group. I'm interested in ESL, and I hope I can meet more friends here. And I think that really, again, just sums up the difference that we're making in people's lives. So thank you very much, and we are open for questions.
Do any board members have comments or questions for staff? Board Member Lamb.
All right, thank you. I just love how giddy and enthusiastic you are as you're talking about all these stats and books. It's incredible. I love that so much. So one of the first slides you showed is the upward trend in visitors since the pandemic. What do you think is driving that uptrend besides people just, you know, getting back into their normal activities after the pandemic? For instance, is the population of Sunnyvale growing? Are the demographics changing, or what do you attribute?
We attribute it pretty strongly to the programming increases. They're subtle, but they track pretty close. If you look at the programming slide or program attendance, and where the line has kind of grown a little bit, but maybe plateaued a bit, you see a very similar trend line with the visitor count. And I think that's really reasonable. The people are coming in for they're walking through the door to attend the program, mm-hmm. and when that increases, we see the increase. Commensurate.
That's awesome. That makes a lot of sense to see that correlation between the two trends. Mm-hmm. Another comment that you had made is about streaming music. So CDs, people aren't really checking out as much CDs, and you're mentioning that we want to kind of fade that away. Similar to how we have eBooks collections, are we looking to have streaming music as an option available for patrons?
We do. One of our platforms, Hoopla, actually does have some streaming albums. So it is usable. I don't have stats right at hand about how much music is used on there, but I do know it's not as significant. The real draw with Hoopla is fiction, audiobooks in particular, and there's also a very strong comic book and graphic novel collection in Hoopla as well. So people are really there for those. The other thing that's really growing in popularity on the Hoopla platform is streaming video. There are like full seasons of television shows and a new feature called Binge Pass, which I think actually we reported on it last month, but a Binge Pass lets you with one checkout have 7-day access to the full run of a certain whatever content. So for example, there's the newest one is the Hallmark Binge Pass. So you can use one Hoopla checkout and you get 7-day unlimited access to all the titles that are available on the Hallmark Plus streaming platform, which is like literally hundreds of Hallmark movies and shows. I'm a big fan myself, to be quite honest. So I know it really well. But we're seeing a lot of increased interest in those platforms as well. So really all the things that people are interested in sort of in physical media, there we see a corresponding interest in the e-media as well.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. And I know, you know, Shaughnessy did present those stats last time. You know, it would be nice to see them in context, you know, physical going down and the hoopla stats going up, you know, kind of side by side. Anyway, that's really great. Thank you. You mentioned the program's attendance and how there are many really popular programs. How do we determine which programs to do more of and which programs to do less of?
Yeah, the librarians look, they analyze. They really analyze performance of every program. There's a very strong feeling of ownership from our librarians of the programs that they host and put on. They pay really close attention to who's coming, what the feedback is. They take it very seriously and then either try to pivot and make things better, improve them. And if they feel like this is something that people want to see more of, that we're hearing, yeah, you need to do more of this. Like, I'm really loving this. We're seeing sort of upward trends there. We'll try to capitalize on those. So we really rely on the librarians to take that close look and really be, you know, talking to our patrons and listening to what it is that they're expressing interest in. I'll take this opportunity to mention that we are actively surveying not just library users. I mean, we want to hear from non-library users as well, but we know it's a little hard. But we have a survey up on our website right now. We've pushed out via some of our newsletters as well. But we're actively looking for input on the things that people are liking, so we can do more of it, and things that they want to see more of. And so I would encourage you to provide your own input on our survey, but encourage people you know in your community to participate. The more information we get, more feedback we get, the better we can react to your point and know what kinds of things we should do more of.
Mm-hmm. Great. And my very last question. So you showed a slide that lists the top videos, and there are a lot of family-friendly titles there, which is really great. Mm-hmm. How do we do parental controls with, you know, teens and kids, et cetera, to make sure that they're not checking out movies that may be not age appropriate?
There really isn't. There really isn't a parental control. We categorize our sections and our movies. So, for example, we have a separate children's collection for DVDs. However, there's nothing in the actual electronic record that would stop a library user that is a certain age from potentially picking something off the shelf and checking it out on their card. We just don't do that. We rely and put the responsibility on parents to be monitoring what their children are using and what they might be checking out. That is, even if a parent agrees to let their child use a library or own a library card and use it without their permission.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Board Member Liu.
Thank you for the presentation. I love the data. Got a couple of data related questions. Mm-hmm. But first, to check on my understanding for definitions, circulation definition is equal to per checkout
and renewal.
So checkout plus renewal, one checkout and one renewal is two circulations.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Love the visitor trend graph. Love to see that net-net we're growing year over year. Do you have any sense of how we're doing relative to our neighbor libraries?
In terms of visitor count specifically?
Yes.
No. Let me back that up. We can know because in the state of California, we do report that stat to the state for tracking. It is a trailing stat, so it takes time to collect those. So we won't have access to like this past fiscal year for, I don't know, Michelle, do you have a sense of when? I just can't recall when
it's
comes.
It's usually sometime in spring.
Yeah, we're always a good year behind, but it does. So in terms of like, you know, how we're, We can look at that, but yeah. It's hard to make decisions in the moment based on that data since it is always trailing.
Got it.
And if I could just add too, it's not an apples to apples comparison. It's city over city. But if you were to compare us, for instance, to our neighboring city of Santa Clara, they have multiple locations. They have twice as much square footage as we do to hold twice as many materials. Yeah. So to do an apples to apples comparison will be very difficult. Got it.
Sense. Thank you. Okay. Super helpful. Just out of my curiosity, I know it's probably more likely no than yes, because it requires a ton of work to do. But do your team look at cohorts and cohort analysis? For example, out of the new users who signed up last year or 3 years ago or 4 years ago, like how they trend with some of these statistics?
Yeah, great. Great question. Not really at this time. But I'm fascinated by the concept. I was thinking. I had been in talking with somebody and got this idea of sending out. I learned about another library that was actually sending out targeted emails to new cardholders. So they were tracking when a person got a new library card and were specifically at a very specified frequency sending out a certain email, like alerting them about like, hey, now that you have this library card, here are some things you might want to learn about. And I was like, that's a great idea. But I think it gets to that idea that like we could try to break down our patron base more and then see if we can do some very specific data analysis, but then also some targeting in terms of marketing to them.
Yep. I was going to remark just something similar. It would allow us to target different cohorts and different audiences, but it is a ton of work and requires a lot of resources.
It's a ton of work. Yeah. The other challenge is obviously it's always best on the more demographic data you have. As you know, we've talked to you about data privacy and those sorts of things. As you know, we try to not keep information if we don't need to about our customers. For example, like, as you know, we don't even track their history of borrowing. They can opt in to keep track, but we can't actually access that data. So on one hand, it would be really cool if I could know which patrons were checking out those, top items. And then I could like push an alert to them saying, hey, because you checked out this thing in the past, you might want to know that the next one's coming out. Like, I would kind of love to do that, but we don't keep that data currently. And so that's not something that's really actionable for us. So I think that's always been the kind of challenge for us is we would love to do a deeper dive into the demographics of our and the cohorts of our patron base. But we are somewhat limited because we're just not collecting some of the data that would be the most of most interest.
Got it. The data that we do collect and what's feeding this report out, do we make that publicly available by chance?
You're saying like what data we collect?
Yeah, just the raw data set.
No. We, again, like to the state, we provide a report of our overall like card holders, like the number, but we don't report any, we don't really publicly report any actual demographic data unless we do some, for example, we sometimes will do a report to, and we'll show you, like, for example, we know zip codes, where our patrons come from. So it's not that we're not hiding it, but we don't actively publish it in any form except when there's a need.
Got it. Thank you.
Vice Chair Hu.
Yeah, I don't really have a great deal of questions. I'm continuing to be very pleased with the numbers that we're seeing. I'm very happy with what we're hearing from staff as well, and always seeing the anecdotal evidence is great. In particular, I just wanted to comment on the cultural programming. I'm glad, and I've personally noticed an uptick in those types of events. I've, not really seeing the quality, just because I always think the quality of our programming is great. So, you know, I'm a bit biased on that one, but I have noticed the quantity, and I think that, you know, seeing the numbers go up as well is, you know, makes me feel good and confident in our ability to deliver relevant cultural programming to our diverse community. So I'm very happy with that. You know, beyond that, I think the only other thing that I had is, you know, it seems like we're seeing so much children's activity, and especially with, you know, my favorite, the Library of Things and the Storytime Kits, and seeing that those are checked out so frequently, so often, you know, I continue to want to see that grow, that collection grow, and especially for our children, and, you know, seeing the story time numbers at the library consistently have such large turnout, I think speaks to the value that it provides to the community, as well as, you know, the desire for members of our community, not just to read books at home, but to also interact with, you know, fellow Sunnyvale residents, and be in that nice space that we have together. So thank you for the presentation. And I just wanted to say those few things.
Board Member Hunt.
Hi. Sorry. Thanks for the presentation. And I was really glad to see that I read 7 out of the top 10 books.
Oh, there you go.
And I did borrow them from the library.
There you go. We'll have to poll you. We'll have to poll you, see if anyone beats that. I doubt it.
So I have, I just want to make sure I understand, because this is like following on the previous question. So when you talked about the difference in, like, you're saying that the pull, that the rise in the numbers is because then the pull is from the programming. And is that what you were saying, where sort of like a change in how you were doing things pre-pandemic and now? Is it like the programming is that has changed? Because you said there's like, obviously, I mean, the pandemic, everything went down and closed down and everything, obviously. But you say you're not showing us the numbers from before that because you feel like it's not showing us anything helpful because you're doing things differently. So what is it that we're doing differently?
We, before the pandemic, we didn't really do any online programs.
Okay.
That is something we launched, right, during the pandemic, and we've kept in some cases, right? So none of our children's programming, all of our children's program has reverted back to in-person, but we still continue to do a significant number of adult programs that are 100% online.
And they have good turnout.
And they have good turnout.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really do. So, yeah, so things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also just living in a time when we know we have so much crowd, like our story times are so incredibly popular. They've always been popular. In the first couple of years after the pandemic, it was a little slow getting people back in the comfort level to come back in. But now that we're starting to see sort of pre-pandemic levels of interest there, our ability to manage crowds, our ability to promote programs and have people understand, you know, when the program's going on, which programs have registration, pre-registration, which ones don't, and our ability to kind of know what we need to do to market best and get those crowds in at the right levels, that's improved over time.
Okay, that's great. Okay, a couple of other questions. So you said the adult literacy program, which is great, and it's run by volunteers. You have like one person who's a library staff person who is like in charge. So, and you mentioned that was there was a grant that funded her. Is that, well, do we have continuing funding for that position or for that person who is training the volunteers?
Yeah, our literacy coordinator is partially grant funded.
Mm-hmm.
Our grant funding for this current fiscal year is secured, so we're
definitely good for the next year at least.
Okay. That's right,
and hopefully they can train a lot of volunteers, and then so really, what's the bottleneck is getting more volunteers on board.
Right now, yes, yeah. I mean, because we have more learners mm-hmm. waiting to learn than we have tutors. When we get all the tutors in the pipeline set, mm-hmm. we'll still have some learners who are waiting. So we do need to attract them, but we're always going to be trying to recruit new learners too.
And how are you going about recruiting? Like, how are you? I have to admit, I mean, I tried to read all the library publication, you know, the emails and everything, but I didn't know we did this.
Yeah. So I think that's a reality, and we know that. This is new for us, and so we're getting the ball rolling right now. We are using our existing channels, marketing channels. We are putting it in the newsletter occasionally to promote. We don't necessarily do it every single time because we don't want the message to get stale. But the other thing is we are continuing to learn new things. The literacy community in California is extremely strong. There are some great libraries out there that have had successful programs for many, many years, and they're very open to sharing ideas. Our literacy coordinator just last week attended the California Library Association conference, and CLA is a place where literacy coordinators like Hee-Jung gather annually to share best practices and ideas. I spoke with her just last week, and she was like, she couldn't stop going on about the ideas that she had gotten. She was like, do I have permission to do this and this and this? Look for more of that.
And then just one last thing about the e-resources, the non-circular, whatever, however you define that. So is that things like Canopy and Hoopla that are like streaming media would be under that kind of stuff because they're not circulating?
Yes.
And then like database. So, and like other databases that people can access through the library, like going through the library website and getting like that's what we're talking about, like e-resources that aren't circulating.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm Hoopla and Canopy. I might have to check. It's Hoopla and Canopy are a little different. They're a little bit of a hybrid model. They are closer to checkout. Mm-hmm. So we might count them in the checkout stats as far as ebooks are concerned.
The ebooks.
Yeah.
But what about like the streaming media? I mean, like if you're watching a Canopy movie, like.
Well, so yeah. So for Canopy, so a streaming movie, we can count because you use a checkout for a period of time where you get access to that item. I'll have to double check. I can report back to you. But the other things you mentioned there, the databases, for sure. Yeah, those kinds of things are what are representative of the e-resources non-checkout.
Okay. And so then, I mean, this is because I know like from the world that I come from, it's like we are continually checking usage to decide because of what to pay. I mean, because these things cost a lot of money. And then if they're not getting used, like, so do you do that regularly? Like, what is getting used? What are you renewing? What are you canceling? Things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you find that things are changing? Like, or do you pretty much stick with the same, databases year after year? I just sort of wonder, like, what do people use? I mean, cause I use an academic library, so I'm like, I don't know what's at the public library so much.
Yeah. We look at our entire list of resources every year, and evaluate them fresh. If we see something that is not being used, or we're seeing a trend, in decline there, we will cut it. Okay. So the list that's also why that I was explaining that the when we show that stat. Every year, the library of what we offer is different because we make changes every single year. There are some things that we drop for lack of use. Mm-hmm. There are some things also another actually reason for a change is during the pandemic, particularly, there was an increase in some grant funding to support access to some of those databases. It was really critical during that time when you couldn't get in and check items out. People were really using those. A lot of that money has gone away in subsequent years, and so that's forced us to say, hey, can we justify the to continue this? In some cases, yes. In some cases, no.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Excuse me. Thank you so much for the in-depth presentation. We appreciate yours and your staff's time and effort to put this together. And I'm very, it's very nice to see the impactful programs our library is offering. Some of them, which I highlight for me, was the Homebound, the Swing Program, the Children Program, the Cultural Programs. Appreciate the library staff putting this together. I'm just curious on one, the top 10 nonfiction fiction for adults. Mm-hmm. Is that on the website? Mm-hmm. The top 10? Maybe that would be, I saw somebody taking a picture of
oh, really?
Walking. So maybe, yeah. So maybe that would be really helpful.
Yeah, it's not, but it can be.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Maybe recommendations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So yeah, that's a great point. Thank you, Vice Chair Hu. We do, our librarians do make lists available of like of sort of highlights and things like that. Mm-hmm. That specific top 10 list, no. We created that for this presentation, but I take your point. I think it is a really cool piece of information and something that we can highlight. We've been looking at as we are getting better at collecting these stats and we're getting just more sophisticated at what we can do, the analysis, we're also trying to up our level in terms of like how to visually represent it, you know, whether it be in an infographic or something like that, and really creative ways to show this data. And so we're actively looking for new ways to put this stuff in front of our patrons to get them excited.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you again.
Chair, could I just make a quick comment in response to Board Member Liu's question about neighboring libraries? I just looked it up really quickly. And this is rough, okay? So don't quote me. But
you know this is recorded.
And this is for 2324 on the state library statistics. And I'm rounding here. The Sunnyvale Public Library was about 1.7 million checkouts e and print. Mountain View was about 1.4 and Santa Clara was about 1.8. So if you want to do a side-by-side comparison, Sunnyvale is 0.39 square feet per capita. Mountain View is 0.74 square foot per capita and Santa Clara is 0.83. per capita. So Santa Clara is more than double the size we are. When we open Lakewood, we'll get to 0.52. So we'll inch up a little bit. But that does. And also Santa Clara, I think, is a little bit low. That won't, even though it's 1.8, I think it might be a little bit lower than what it would be the following year. They had a late start from the pandemic mm-hmm. to opening at full speed. We were open at full speed, like when we opened. But they took maybe another year to get up to their regular hours, which would account for a lower circulation too.
Mm-hmm. Thank you once again.
Thank you.
This is now the public's opportunity to address the board on topics not listed on tonight's agenda and presentation items. This section is limited to 15 minutes and may be extended or continued after the public hearing general business section of the meeting. Individuals may only speak once during oral communication. This board meeting is a limited public forum, and the board can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments during oral communications must be limited to matters within the board's authority, which is known as the board's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker comments are outside the board's subject matter jurisdiction, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. This allows the board to conduct its business in a reasonable, efficient manner and protects the rights of other speakers. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of disagreement with the content of the speech. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer, raise your digital hand now, or dial *9 on a telephone to indicate if you wish to speak. I will call on members of public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Do we have anyone wanting to speak under oral communication?
We have no one online or in person at this time.
I will now close oral communication. I'll go ahead and open public comment on consent calendar item. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer, raise your digital hand now, or dial *9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I'll call on members of public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Do we have anyone wanting to speak?
We have no one in person or online at this time.
I will now close public comment. May I ask my colleagues if they would like to approve the meeting minutes?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the meeting minutes from prior meeting.
I second.
Recording officer, please conduct a Roll call vote.
Sure. Chair Jetaconda?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hu?
Yes.
Board Member Han?
Yes.
Board Member Liu?
Yes.
Board Member Lam?
Yes.
The motion passes 5-0.
Moving on to our next item.
25-1047, is there a staff report?
There is not a staff report for this one. However, this is an opportunity for you to discuss if there are items that you would like to consider as, like, as we have called it in the past, study issues. Now there are priority projects, if there's anything that you want to move forward to try and get on the radar of the City Council. So basically, this board has not traditionally had a lot of study issues that they've proposed. These are things that are potential policy changes, new policies that would go to City Council for consideration, perhaps for a study. There has been one study issue in the past that was dropped by the City Council, which was to do an analysis of the spending habits of neighboring libraries. The way the process is going to work this year is, if there is some kind of policy change or some type of study that you would like to see that is library related, this would be your opportunity, one, to discuss it, and two, to determine if you wanted our chair to move that forward and talk to one of or more of the City Council to see if they would like to take that on as one of their limit of three study issues that they can propose for the year.
Do any board members have comments or questions for this topic?
Yeah, you know, something that I was hoping to discuss with you all and maybe advance as a council priority project, not that this is a new thing we have, is whether or not we can approve a budget to design and locate a branch library that focuses on children's collections and services. I think that, you know, throughout this presentation and other presentations we've seen in the past, clearly we have a great deal of traffic and circulation and programming for children. And, you know, we also know that it's, I believe, hovering right around 10%, I think a touch above that in terms of the floor space that we have in the library. And, you know, I think that we have a demonstrated need, and it would make sense to take a look at building a branch library. And, you know, if we can request council to approve a budget to, again, design and locate that branch, I think that would be a great start to, you know, addressing the needs that we face as a library. And I'm curious to hear my other board members' thoughts on that.
So your idea is a dedicated children's library. So would...
Right. So I wouldn't want it to be a dedicated children's library, right? I think it should primarily focus on children's programming, but you know, it should be for all collections, but really to address the need that I feel like we're seeing with the children's collection.
I agree there's definitely a need. I mean, we know, we saw from this that, yeah, 70% of circulation is children's books. The numbers of kids we see coming to the story hour, I mean, obviously kids are coming to the library and they're using it, and that's great. So first of all, I mean, I know we're opening Lakewood, which will have a children's section, and children's librarians there. I was sort of wondering in the big picture, I mean, as we know, we're not getting a new library. What is happening? Like, there are so many things that we know are wrong with this building and things that need to happen. So is there any talk about, I don't know, redoing parts of the building, maybe expanding what we have? I don't know. I mean, like, what's happening with, is there going to be any sort of renovation, anything? Or because we're not building a new library.
Right. So at the last meeting, we went through the presentation that we made to the City Council on July 29th that presented all of those options to them and for them to really take a look and say, are any of these off the table? Because we don't want to go down a rabbit hole if they're at the end going to say, nah, I'm not interested. So what bubbled up to the top at that meeting was the interest in looking at a branch library potentially at the community center campus, since there's already a good infrastructure there in terms of meetings, meeting room space, programming space. So it's almost like you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There was also interest in looking at a potential interim solution, perhaps in a retail space that could have tenant improvements, and maybe in downtown or somewhere around that basically we could use as a library. There was also interest in some kind of public-private partnership that could be, well, just about anything, really. Examples could be the city owns property that's, you know, in a highly visible, lucrative spot. Do we lease that space to a company that wants to have a footprint on a very visible area, and we lease it at, you know, nothing, basically, and in return they build us a library? Is there a potential for a partnership to build affordable housing and have a library on the bottom floor? You know, just the sky's limit there. You know, please don't hold me to any of those. Those are just ideas. And at the end of the day, also, we know that doing nothing is not an option, which they agreed to. And so there is a desperate need to also look at renovating the central library. I don't see us getting the $300 million to do a teardown and build a brand new 100,000 square foot building. And I don't think we should keep putting our chips in that pot, hoping that it's going to happen. Hope really isn't a plan, right? So where we are moving forward is city staff are talking about options for next steps and what might be the best solution to a quicker remedy. There was talk about having reading rooms around town. So could we have a space at the Columbia Neighborhood Center to have a reading room? Could we have a space at the Senior Center to have a reading room? These are great options, but those aren't really much more robust than a little free library. And I know I'm exaggerating, but it's just not a solution to a problem. Just like we talked about how great it would be to have a mobile unit, some kind of bookmobile, or since we're LRS, a rec and read mobile, or a library of things mobile. Again, nice to haves, gets us out into the community, great for outreach, great, you know, footprint at an event, not a solution to our problem. So I think, you know, where Commissioner Hu is going, Vice Chair Hu's going with this is not letting the next budget year go by without trying to have something on the books. Is this a study issue? I don't think it is, because we've studied it. Right. You know, I don't think we need to get a ton more information. We know what the community, it could come down to, if it's decided we're going to go with a branch, then we could do some outreach on what would you like to see. But the need for a library, the need for additional children's space, I'm not sure what else we could tell you that would increase that argument. I think the statistics are really obvious. I think if you come to an event, we had 1,100 people at the Diwali event, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Like, what more can we tell you about that, right? So I think it's a matter of, is there, if I'm interpreting what Vice Chair who's saying is this something the board puts their chips in to talk to the city council? Is this the priority project that you all want to say, this is our invest, this is what we want?
Yeah, I mean, basically words right out of my mouth. I mean, I, as Michelle said, you know, the we're seeing so much of the statistics really back this up, and I think that, you know, we can use a lot of the work that has already been put in to the, you know, main library master planning to inform what we're going to think about it in terms of a branch, right? I think it's relevant to focus on children's services and programming and collections just based on our numbers. And I think that we can, you know, take the best and most relevant parts of a, you know, part of the main library plan and, you know, reuse that to save time, hopefully save a little bit of money, and move faster to serve our community with the services that they're showing us that they need, you know, by literally showing up to our events and checking out the books. And of course, using the early childhood room that has been so popular. You know, we in terms of a location, right, I did think that it's relevant to, I mean, I'd personally like to see it at Sunnyvale Community Center. I think that there's just so much obvious overlap and synergy that could happen there. But, you know, I'm not opposed to it being somewhere else. If someone had a better idea or if council had a spot that they had in mind, which is why I think maybe, you know, if there's design considerations with what it builds like and where we want to locate it, right, maybe that could be studied. But I'm also not really interested in doing a study issue on the need for a branch that focuses on children's services, because I think that's pretty open and shut, if you ask me. So, you know, I feel like I've done a lot of talking, and I am curious to hear what you all think about that. Is this something that we can put forward to council? Because I personally would very much like to.
I agree. I mean, I think, yeah, the numbers tell the story. And I just sort of wonder, like, so what I want to understand what is our role in this? Like, what can we do? Because, yeah, I think, I mean, I just remember the number of times, like, I sat in that, like, gym at the community center watching my kid play indoor soccer when I could have gone to a branch library and picked out a book while he was doing that, you know, because there wasn't enough time to go home and anything, but there's something else to do, except, you know, indoor soccer is not very exciting when they're, like, seven. It's okay. He doesn't live at home anymore. It's okay. So definitely, I think the community center is a great idea. I think it's so, like, well, I would like to understand what our role is now as a board, what we could do, unless somebody else has, like, something else they want to add.
I can try and answer that. I think it's very ironic that you mentioned I wish I had a place to, you know, something to do instead of just sitting there watching the game. I've just been working on getting some more benches outside the gym so people have a place to sit. So, you know, definitely having a library for, I'm sure parents would love that, which is also the reason why, you know, I don't think you need to decide, like, what the focus of that branch might be, just the fact that there would be a branch. I don't even think you need to double down on location or anything. It's just, like, we need to move on something is, I think, more, you know, an easier thing to define. I think for what your steps are, you know, certainly you could each speak to your respective council person that this is a priority, if you decide as a group that it is. I would also encourage, if you decide you want to push this forward, I really think it would be incumbent upon Chair Giudicanda to also approach the mayor and, you know, make a request that it would be one of the study issues put forward. I think Garrett has something to add.
Yeah, I'll just, I mean, so functionally, you know, what you can do is you could, in this item here, in this hearing, you could vote as a body to select or to make, establish a recommendation for a council priority project. Every board and commission is sort of has the ability to, as a body, recommend one priority project that would then go on a list of board and commission nominated projects. The council will evaluate at an upcoming meeting when they are going to select priority projects. Each, like Michelle was mentioning, each council member will have the ability to identify three priority projects that they want to support. They could include board and commission nominated projects. They don't have to. They could come up with three of their own ideas that they'd come up with alone. The council will then consider each person's three ideas, and then as a body, the council will select a certain number of priority projects that they then adopt as a council, and those will go forward, and then staff will be directed to study those. This is a new process, but it comes out of the old study issue process. So typically the way that would work is then staff would be directed to then take on that study issue. They would come back with an analysis of what it would actually take to complete in terms of budgetarily and time-wise and all that. And then that would then become part of the work that's done over whatever period of time was identified. So that's kind of how the arc of sort of, I guess, legislatively, how this is going to sort of work in this new form. So that, again, your opportunity here is if you would like, you could move and vote approve a one priority project recommendation.
Yes.
You don't have to. That's the other thing. You don't have to do that. But that is one of your options for an action you could take in this public hearing. What Michelle mentioned in terms of your own advocacy to the council members, because again, they're gonna do what they're gonna do. That is also within your purview.
My comment here on this topic, and it's simply a comment, is I've seen how we have taken a lot of concerted effort into making Measure E happen in the past year. And obviously we know the results of how it turned out. I've seen the very conscientious effort by staff to present to City Council about potential next steps and such. I think, to be totally candid, I'm just really eager for us to take some action on a direction. And my sense is that, you know, of course, we want to take everyone's feedback. We want to, you know, take the best approach possible, but it seems like it just takes a really long time. So to be totally honest, I don't have a very extremely strong opinion on many of the brilliant ideas on next steps. How can we help you expedite and get progress going?
Well, this is one way. This shows that it's a priority for this board, that movement on on additional library service is a priority for you. Additional space and service. You know, you don't even need to say the word branch. You can, you know, put forward something that says we need to move forward on expansion of libraries and modernization of library services. And we want, that's your goal for the next budget year. So that's certainly how you could approach it. That's one way. Certainly, you know, looking at potentially even a budget proposal could be another way of looking at it, and just saying we want to propose X number of dollars to hire an architect, you know, whatever it is, and do an estimate on what it would cost to do in a library. And, you know, is that a branch? You know, what's feasible? That's what's going to come down to city manager and staff looking and saying, what are our options that could be moved forward quicker than later?
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of the mechanics, because I know there are many procedures and such, like, how should we voice that? Is it through a study issue? Is it just by advocating to our council member that this is important? Like, what is the straight path that we should take?
I don't think there's a straight path, but I do think there are many paths.
Mm.
So, you know, this is one. Talking to your individual council members as well is also your option as well. Mm. So it's being heard from different perspectives. So that would really be up to the board.
So if we wanted to, let's say, come up with a proposal, whatever it may be, do we have, obviously we can't like meet at a cafe and talk about it, because
you're talking about it now.
So we have to talk about it now, and we have to agree on it like now, or can like, so we have to come, if we want to come up with a proposal, we have to come up with it now, put it in, well, not in writing or in writing,
we'll
or
take care of that for you. Yeah. We'll
we help would you say, with that. Okay. And then, so that then it would go to the council. Correct. Is that what you're saying? So we need, if we want to, we have to do it now.
Correct.
So I, so I think doing it now is great because we're all here, right? And I really like Michelle's
agenda.
And it's on the agenda. This is a public meeting. This is fantastic. I really like Michelle's comment just a couple of minutes ago when, like, we don't have to be extremely prescriptive in saying what we want. We're simply advocating that we want to expand library services and modernize. And I think staff is more than capable of figuring out what that looks like. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if that's the action that this team here feels we can take tonight, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think that's great too. In just in terms of being prescriptive, personally, I'm a little bit more in favor of being just a tad more prescriptive than that. I think that, you know, there's room for us to highlight specific items. I mean, in particular, you know, we're all familiar with the issue with the bathrooms in the main library. You know, if there's a separate bullet point, line item, whatever that is, I'm perfectly okay with including that. And I think that we should, just to let people know what we're working with and what we do want addressed, because some, I think, are really slam dunks. And that and specifically children's services, to me, are really key ones that deserve special attention.
I mean, I completely hear you. I think some of the stuff, you're right. I totally agree that it's obvious, like the plumbing issues, check. I think my concern about being very specific is that I don't want it to go down a rabbit hole with one council member saying, well, actually, I don't personally like blah. And I don't want that to stop the conversation and potentially stall things.
Okay.
So an option could be the title we've been using as we've been discussing this is the expansion and modernization of library services in Sunnyvale. So that could be your umbrella. That's broad, but it is also gives you a little specificity in terms of, like, such as expansion of children's services, such as remodel of bathrooms. So it's not limiting you to a branch. It's not limiting you to just doing the bathrooms. It could be, you know, a variety of things under there. I wouldn't put 25 things but you could easily put two or three and say, this is, we want to see a step towards this as a priority project.
So I'm in agreement with the expansion, modernization of library services. And I also like the idea of the community, what is that? Community center. So did anybody else have?
I just had one question about just like, I know we're getting into nitty gritty on what's included in that. And the topic of the bathrooms, like if some, just trying to play out, like how does it actually work if, let's say next month, the bathrooms break, right? And that's a forcing function to do those repairs. City will come out, will figure out the funding from somewhere, right? Okay. So I guess just for us to think about, like, where's the balance for us to include, like, things like if they, you know, break, they'll get fixed, versus if we don't push, they're not going to get talked about. I'm trying to find that balance.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great discussion item. I mean, personally, you know, from some of the meetings that we've seen, I think pretty much everyone is in agreement that this is an issue and is worthy of being fixed right now. You know, it's just a matter of there's so many priorities throughout the city. And when everything's important, you know, I guess some things are more equally important than others. So I want to highlight this to, you know, most equally important because, you know, I mean, we get how many visitors a day at the library? And, you know, that's a lot of people's primary contact with city services. You know, our staff does a great job. I feel like our building does a little bit less of a good job. And if we can sort of rectify that, that would be great. And, you know, if we're able to find the money, find the priority, find the bandwidth and push that to the front, that would be great for me in terms of, you know, the nitty gritty. I mean, you know, it is nitty and gritty in there. And, It just needs to be addressed is what I think I'm sort of wanting to do. So personally, I wouldn't want to wait until, you know, it gets to the point. And ideally, we can do it without huge major disruptions. And I worry personally that if we wait until it breaks, then we're sort of inviting, okay, now, you know, there's going to be extra disruptions because it's fully broken. So if we can get out ahead of that, I mean, that's my thinking on the matter. So I think that informs why I'm speaking this way.
So perhaps the hybrid of what both you and Commissioner Liu were saying is maybe urgent system upgrades, you know?
So how do we do this? Since are we going to take a motion according to the new policy?
Yes. First, we'll open public comment just to make sure. I mean, we don't have anybody wanting to speak at this time, but let's do it officially, and then you'll need to take a vote. Yeah.
Yeah, so somebody would move some proposed language. Then you can discuss that proposed language. And if you need to kind of wordsmith it all, you could make some amendments to that motion. But then ultimately, you would then vote on that motion. And then the language you've agreed to, which we could help with a little in terms of getting it to the council. But that would become the Board of Library Trustees recommended priority project to the council.
Gotcha. So I'll go ahead and open the public hearing on the specific item. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer. Raise your digital hand now or dial *9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I'll call on members of public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Do we have anyone wanting to speak?
No, we do not.
So I will now close public comment. Thank you.
Great. I'll go ahead and try this. I'd like to make a motion to make the expansion and urgent modernization of library services this board's council priority project that we recommend to our city council. I think I just say that, right? And then GS, okay.
We need a second.
I second the motion.
Recording officer, please conduct a roll call vote.
Chair Jettaconda?
Yes.
Do we want to discuss it?
No, it's okay. We're all helping each other out. What you probably want to do is open discussion on the motion. So Vice Chair Hu specified some language there. So what I would recommend you do now is open for discussion about the words that he moved. And if you want to recommend any changes to that, you can request, you know, you could do it as like a friendly amendment to the motion. He could then accept that. Or if not, you would then need to vote to not pass that motion and then do a new motion with new language.
Okay.
Is it ready? You know, the motion was to make the expansion and urgent modernization of library services a council priority project that this body recommends to council.
Any discussion on that?
It's pretty similar to what I had drafted.
Okay.
So that's my way of saying, yes, I agree.
Can we add, what I'm saying is, can we add something to this? So that's, I like that. But like, can we say, for example, the, you know, renovation of the bathrooms at the main branch. Second example, the opening of an additional library space somewhere in the city.
I think so. I think that's fine to me. I don't know if that needs an amendment even, because I think that could just go in the body of, you know, the recommendation, but I'm not 100% sure on the mechanics of that.
But I think since she's going to make a change, update it, it needs a new motion.
I would include it in the motion.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think you may want to look at instead of the opening of a new library, perhaps the planning or design, because
chances are we won't be opening anything.
It wouldn't be in a year.
Right. So we would be looking at the step. How to,
yeah.
So maybe where and how, yeah. So like,
yes, maybe the planning and design
of an additional library space.
Why don't you craft it again? Oh. We'll have to read it.
Okay, well, we. All right. What was the beginning?
You'd like to make a motion.
Oh, so I need to make a motion of the whole thing.
No. No. What we have, as I have it now, is sort of on the table is expansion and urgent modernization of library services. So as it stands right now, the way the motion is, if you were to vote yes without any changes, that text would become your recommendation to the council. They would look at it and they would say, okay, that's what's on our list to consider. If you want to add anything or change anything there, then what you could do is you could request it as a friendly amendment. And then since it's Vice Chair Hu's motion, he could accept that, and then it would change the motion.
Vice Chair, can I make a recommendation to a friendly recommendation or an amendment to your motion to add, okay, I've got to come up with the wording now. For example, the renovation of the bathrooms at the current main branch and the planning and design of an additional library space somewhere in the city.
I accept that amendment. I'm wondering, do we need any discussion on that? Because I don't think we do, and I'm okay with that as it stands. Great.
This is your discussion time. So.
Okay, yeah. So I'm open to that if anyone else wants to speak on the matter.
Do we second that again? Okay, then that's fine.
I second.
You don't need to. It was just proposed and accepted. So now the motion as it stands is that. Sorry, I didn't get it. Yeah, no, Elizabeth did. And again, like if there's a specific like word like bathroom versus restroom, I think we can.
Yeah,
I think it's okay.
We won't change the meaning of it, but if there's a more appropriate word,
can we amend that to restroom instead of bathrooms?
And then of course, before you vote, we'll ask Elizabeth to read back the actual text of the amendment or the motion.
I think I got it.
Let's have it.
Expansion and urgent modernization of library services to include renovation of restrooms at main library and planning and design of additional library space. Good.
So yeah, so if you finish discussing and you're ready to vote on it, then you can, the chair can close the discussion and call for the vote.
Okay, we close the discussion. Recording officer, please conduct a roll call vote.
Chair Jitakonda?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hu?
Yes.
Board?
Yes.
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 The next portion of the agenda is for oral reports and announcement by board members and staff to share information.
Arjun Khan, is your mic on?
The next portion of the agenda is for oral reports and announcements by board members and staff to share information. Do board members have any non-agenda items or comments? Does staff have any non-agenda items or comments?
Yes, just two quick announcements. The first is that, as you know, the December meeting for this body has been canceled for lack of agenda items. So we hope you enjoy your month off and we'll have happy holidays there. The other announcement is that we are currently experiencing a technical issue with the library events calendar on the website. We've known about it for a few days and we're working as quickly as possible to get it rectified. But right now, you can see the listing of events, our people can see the listing of events events that are upcoming, but when they click on the links for more information, those are broken. We do have an interim solution in place. The first banner on the website is actually links to a PDF, which we always make available, a PDF version of our events calendar that has live hyperlinks on it, and that those work to get directly to the information there. So it is a little bit of adjustment. We've mentioned that again on our website. If this lingers, we'll probably push out more information like in newsletters, but I just want to make you aware because like I said, it has been ongoing for a few days. We hope to get it rectified soon, but it is interfering a little bit with getting the information out about some of our programs, which I did want to mention. We have an exciting slate of programs this month, including a lot of highlights around Native American Heritage Month, which is the month of November. This evening, I'm sorry that you had to miss it, but being here, but we had a really lovely children's programming featuring representatives from the Muwekma Ohlone tribe, which is the tribe that this is like their ancestral lands, with a land acknowledgement and a craft led from that tribal tradition. So that just kicks off our month of really exciting events, and so please do check that out, especially when the calendar is back up and running. Thank you.
The meeting is adjourned at 8:45, and I want to thank everyone for your participation in tonight's meeting.